This is Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I'm here with Nick Davis.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us this morning, because everybody's away for the holidays.
Or they have families or loved ones.
I spent my last night with a loved one called Dorothy Malone in Written on the Wind on the big screen.
Film forum or?
Walter Reed.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yes, it was very exciting. I hadn't seen the movie in like 10 years, I think, and I had completely forgotten so many choice bits. Like, I remembered some of the key things, of course. Like, of course I remembered the mambo and the oil, the oil well, like statuary and such, but
Yes, indeed. It's quite entrancing to her.
but I had completely forgotten that she does a whole flashback without flashback imagery with just her face.
Oh, I don't remember that
Well, it's like dialogue, it's like voiceover dialogue from images you aren't seeing
either.
from her childhood, and it's so great the range of expressions on her face as she remembers how much she loved Mitch as a child.
That
Anyway,
is a surprising Oscar win.
it
Not because it's
is.
bad, but because it's like, this is what they. Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay.
I just tweeted this morning. I was like, that was as good of a call as when Gina Gershon won the Oscar for Showgirl. Oh, damn it! So, if you haven't seen Written on the Wind, kids, by Douglas Sirk, please rent it. It is amazing. As are most of his movies.
And then rent it again.
Yeah. In case you've forgotten any perfect moment, like I had forgotten that great line when one of the characters matter says and says, "Your mind is so filthy," to Marilee, Dorothy Malone, Oscar-winning Dorothy Malone, and she goes, "I'm filthy, period."
And there's your Twitter bio.
Well,
Well,
Douglas
I
Sirk was
was
an
actually
odd way to
thinking about
begin
Written on the
with.
Wind at the end of Joy, and I think I might have gotten a little bit mistaken just because I read Guy Lodge's piece that was saying it's actually kind of based on the, or recalls more directly the end of Giant, which makes sense. But at least I was thinking about Oil in 1956.
Because Miracle Mobs, oil, it all blends together.
Yeah, well, like women behind their desks being like, I run shit now. Like, oh, okay.
So I hear that you're a semi-fan of Joy,
Yeah, I liked it. Are
which
you
is that's exactly where I am too. Like,
okay.
I thought it was so much better than the reviews are indicating, but I didn't. I thought it felt really unfinished. That was my main gripe with it. Like, it seemed like it needed like two more editing passes, maybe.
And then when the editing credits come up and there are four of them, it's like, oh, honey.
And I didn't like it took me like a half hour to understand even how to feel about it at all. It was very messy, I thought. But I really enjoyed the cast, and I think it's very typical of David O. Russell. Like, people get very worked up about his movies in terms of loving to hate them. But I tend to actually my least favorite might actually be Silver Linings Playbook, which is everyone else's favorite. But I tend to really enjoy the way he directs actors and the way he lets them, share frames. And anyway, so I liked the cast a lot. I wouldn't nominate anybody, but like I thought everybody was good. Especially, I loved Isabella Rossellini's whole like monologue about business.
She was amazing. And especially having just seen, as you know, Death Becomes Her for the first time a couple days ago.
Oh, yes.
The Isabella Rossellini mid-film arrival to be like super crazy, like is, has factored heavily into my week. But the only person I liked more than her was Elizabeth Rome, who I just thought, one thing I liked about the whole movie is that even when you imagine that it's going, and you're not wrong, right, that Joy is going to continue to have more success and lift herself out of at least some aspects of her circumstances. But the movie still feels kind of sad, even when it's happy. And I think maybe that sequence where she sells her own mop for the first time on TV was the only time I felt actually kind of blissed out during it. But either music or other performances or other things were usually reminding me to not be just elated at different points in this. And the sister, who's just so
sour.
Sour. And you really don't know from the writing or the performances whether she's completely delusional that she has ideas or could have done as well if given the chance, or if she's totally indulging herself to think that. Mm-hmm. I loved that. And I just loved watching her face, like, during the QVC broadcast, for example, of, like, actually being hurt, you know, feeling badly for Joy, but also not.
Yeah, I thought she was super good in American Hustle as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's an underrated actress.
I liked her in that, but this, to me, was, like, a whole other level. And if I didn't at all realize that's who that was.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't look like what I...
No.
It's hard to look like how she looked in American Hustle, but...
Yes. She tends to look different in different movies, though.
What else has she been in?
But it could, because even, like, her television work, she doesn't really remind you of, you know, what she's done in the movies, so to speak.
Okay.
Because she's most of her work has been in television.
Okay.
Which is probably why you aren't as familiar with her.
Yeah.
Since you don't watch as much of that. I'm trying to...
Boy.
What?
Hoi polloi.
No, I only mean, like, it's, you know, it's the truth. It's the truth. Both of us tend to, like, it's easy for us to miss whole actors if they've only famous for a series we've never watched.
Completely.
So,
Or I love it when there, I can't think of a recent example, but when there's an actor who I'm talking about because I've seen them in some awesome thing I saw at the Landmark in May once, and somebody's like, they're the star of a TV show that's been on for like 6 years.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, actually, I just remember where I first saw her in, or first remembered her in Angel.
David Boreanaz?
The Joss Whedon series, yeah.
Okay.
She was the female lead in that series.
Oh, okay.
She was in something else that I've, like, some other TV show that I think I watched a few times that she was in. But anyway.
I wasn't crazy about, I mean, don't we both have this that as part of the fun of watching David O. Russell direct actors is that you inevitably like some of them more and less than others?
Yeah, and that he tends to, he's one of the rare directors that can have multiple acting styles within a movie and it not feel like they're in different movies.
Yes, that's true.
Which is a very singular gift in a way. Yes.
But I understand that part of the value here is that he's building this repertory, but I did want a break from Robert De Niro a little bit. And Virginia Madsen, I never quite felt entertained by whatever movie she was in.
Oh, really? Because I really loved her in this.
Did you?
Yeah, it would just seem... It seemed like Virginia Madsen actually getting a character part, which is... Even when she's playing a small character, it's like the beautiful woman, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So it was nice to see her give, like, an actual character where her looks didn't factor in to the character that much. But I have a soft spot for her. You know, any of those 80s actresses.
Yeah.
Well, not any of them. Let's not be crazy. But many of the 80 actresses I have a soft spot for.
Did you feel like... I definitely got more into the movie as it went. There was a good half hour or so at the beginning that I thought, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, at the beginning, I just didn't understand what he was going for with all the soap opera stuff.
Yeah.
It felt like, is he doing, like, a Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, like, sort of stylized thing that's gonna...
Oh, yeah.
Gonna not quite sync up with the rest of it. Like, I didn't understand what he was going for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even sure once it's over that I completely understand all of what he was going for. It does, like, I'm not going to back down on this. It does really feel to me like it needs another run through the edit.
Yeah.
By
a fifth editor.
Right. But in moments, like, it's a good movie.
Yeah. And there's just, to me, there was a whole greater than the sum of its parts feeling that just kept increasing. Like, I'm not even sure if I watched it again if I would feel like all the scenes in the second half were just categorically better, or if I just was so pumped by having watched her have her moment on QVC and that just lingered.
That scene is pretty great.
It's so great.
Yeah.
And I was reading somebody who I didn't know on Twitter had said that the second half is much closer to the script that Annie Mumolo originally wrote, and that most of David O. Russell's changes and interventions are in the first half, which to this person was explaining why they feel so different. And I would totally believe it. And I you probably know more about this than I do. I had gotten the sense that there was some gruesome Hollywood story about what he wound up doing to her script, and now she only has a story credit or whatever.
I mean, I don't... I've actually been trying to pull myself away from pre-production coverage of late, just because I feel like the internet is really exhausting that interest.
Yes.
Without realizing that they're doing it. They're going to make sure that you know everything about every movie before you see it, which is not for me.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to, like, and it's a little hard to avoid it when you're writing a blog, a daily blog.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to find, like, a happy balance, because I have to say that I was just so happy watching Star Wars to not know anything about it.
Me too. I'd never even watched one of the trailers.
Yeah, I mean, because I didn't know, like, I mean, some of it was predictable even not knowing, because it, you know, it's a...
Because it's the first movie again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's still, like, it was still, like, I didn't know, I think I knew the character names, and that was about it. Just from, you know, reading casting notices or whatever. But I just, like, it was just really fun to be like, okay, take me on an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought if I had watched, like, four trailers, it just would not have been the same to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally.
I did watch the very first teaser, which was thankfully not very telling of what was... I mean, it had some images, but it wasn't like a story trailer at all.
Uh-huh.
And then also recently, after the fact, with both Room and The Revenant, which I saw both of those, like, early before, you know, they were out, and which I don't for every movie. Everybody thinks that we all do, but we don't always.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked to see, like, the entire movie of both of those movies is in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, The Revenant's even worse, because there's so little plot in The Revenant.
Okay.
That, like, every story beat is in the trailer.
Oh.
Like, literally everything until the very end of the movie. And I'm like, how? I don't know.
Okay. I'm not going to think about that too much, because that's the only one I still haven't seen, but I've seen that trailer a million times.
Well, no, the very first trailer to that, that just has the heavy breathing and all the horse riding and stuff.
Yeah.
That is not too explicit.
Okay.
It's the main trailer that came after that. So my new rule for myself with trailers is I watch the first one and nothing else after.
Okay.
Because I kind of have to watch the first one to know what's going on. But in terms of the film.
How do you avoid them? Well, do you see so many things at screenings that you don't... Because you see movies like with...
I see movies with crowds all the time. Like, yeah. I love going to the movies, but... I try not to just pay attention. Like, this is going to sound horrible, but sometimes I actually play on my phone until the movie starts.
Oh, okay.
I know people get mad if you have your phones on during trailers, but I just don't want to see the trailers.
Yeah.
I just don't want to know everything that's going to happen in the movie.
Yeah. You can just dunk your head in your popcorn.
Right. But it's easy, a little bit easier now with more theaters doing reserved seating, because it's nicer to show up, like, right before the movie starts.
Oh, I see.
So that's another thing I've been doing more often now, is just waiting until the very last second to go in if they have reserved seating.
Celebrity style.
I mean, I don't want to feel this way, but it's like really the marketing departments have ruined it.
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean.
Because it used to be like some movies would always be ruined, even way back. You know, they would tell too much in the trailers, but now there's most movies have like four trailers before they come out or something.
Yeah.
And it's just like you just have seen the whole movie. Like I have no interest in seeing that. I mean, I probably wouldn't have anyways, but that Deadpool movie with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, I've
I
only seen
think
the
that's had
trailer.
five or six trailers now. It's insane.
Really?
Like there's constantly like new trailer, or maybe it's just all the different blogs finally getting around to posting things.
Yikes. Of all the movies to over-advertise. And yet, I still didn't even know what was happening or what it was. So somebody's not doing the job right.
Yeah, like I just don't need to know like cameos in particular. Like if I didn't spend so much time online and I happened to see Deadpool, it would have been a nice surprise that one of the X-Men was in it, but now I know. So
Oh, I see. Well, so how many times have you seen Star Wars now?
oh, just once, just
Okay.
once. So when I saw your second your tweet about seeing it a second time, well, first of all, we should say spoilers galore. I'm not going to worry about spoilers at this point. So
Yeah.
if you haven't seen Star Wars, move along.
Yeah.
Because it was like when I wrote my review, it was such a weird thing to not be able to talk about story at all. Even though I don't spend a lot of time on story in reviews, it's weird to not be able to mention anything.
Right.
Yeah, I want to hear your reaction in full. I've felt a little left out of the internet conversation because people are so obsessed with Star Wars always, even between movies. But I feel like I don't quite have much to say about it, even though I super enjoyed it. And it's like everybody's writing like five articles a day about it, and I'm like, I'm not sure how I could come up with that stuff. But I was very intrigued by your tweet that you think Oscar Isaac is playing Poe Dameron as gay.
Well, obviously at the beginning, I just think he's playing it gay because I'm feeling so attracted to him. But and the instant camaraderie that sets in between him and John Boyega is that just feels pretty Butch Cassidy to me, which was kind of fun. Seeing like that it wasn't a buddy, just become each other's. Like, we didn't even have to go through the phase where each one thinks the other one's fucking up, you know? Just are instantly a good team. But that reunion scene, shall we call it,
Where he bites his
later
lip.
on, like, this is your jacket. No. It
It looks
suits
great.
me.
Yeah, it looks
Yeah.
great on you. And then he bites his lip too.
Yeah. And the vociferous hug and how thrilled they both are to see each other. I mean, Star Wars is, as a franchise is full of scenes of people being thrilled to see each other again, but hasn't always felt like that. I don't know.
You're like, but it could be. I'm just wildly attracted to Oscar Isaac, because who isn't?
Yeah, and who would kick John Boyega around either, you know? But the. Even if all that's happening is that I'm ruining Star Wars, and this is just a, like my brother was not into this, but you know
Did you see
this,
it with him?
no, but we grew up, you know, playing with the figures together and everything, and he was there. He and his wife miraculously had their 5th year anniversary the day it came out, which is like the best possible planning you could do for my brother from a corporate perspective. So, he's having a hard time with. The arc of Han Solo in it.
Oh,
But
yes.
otherwise he really loved it. But not my reading of it. But that's okay.
We all can't see things the same
We all
way.
can't see things the same way, and nor should we. But if it just becomes one movie where two guys are just openly emotionally like, I love you, man, you know, like, great. But I think we know the truth.
Yes, I mean, I read this article on, I think it was in GQ, because I hadn't really thought about like how suffused Star Wars is with that sort of like what you're saying, people thrilled to see each other and the camaraderie
Yeah.
of it, which is a really fun, joyful thing about Star Wars. You know, it's
Yeah.
not like there's so many franchises that are so like, ugh, you know,
Yeah.
and like no like emotional like fullness, you know,
Yeah.
because people, you know, can't express that and be action heroes, you know.
Right.
Like I was reading this thing in GQ and about someone who had never seen a Star Wars movie writing about it, and
Oh, I read that.
it was
Yeah.
so funny when she described Chewbacca as Han Solo's beautiful wife, beautiful 900-year-old wife, or something like that. I just was laughing so hard because I was like, "That's another like homosocial pair."
Or do you remember a couple years ago when Melanie Lynskey watched the Star Wars movies for the first time with her boyfriend and said, "What is the name of that dog who's Han Solo's boyfriend?" And everybody got mad. Yeah.
So yeah, I really
I
enjoyed
agree
it.
with you that I don't. It's not the kind of movie that I feel either inspires me with all kinds of things to comment upon. Like, and in fact, one of the things I even maybe like about it is that it's just so fleet-footed and well-edited, and that you just get so swept up in it. And you know, I'm fine when movies drag, but I think it's so impressive when a movie that doesn't want to drag truly doesn't, especially with this many worlds and characters to visit. So I think I just admire it from the standpoint of just how much movement is in it and how awesome the sound is and how, like, what we're saying about the camaraderie among the people feels true between the movie and the audience. It doesn't want to brood at us, it doesn't want to make us wait for things. It just It's so eager to please, and it totally pleases.
Right. And also it's brooding that does take place is not viewed as like a strength.
Exactly, yes.
Which I think is beautiful because so many movies like the anti-hero thing and like the villains that you're supposed to secretly be rooting for
Totally.
is not really the case in Star Wars movies, which is something I like about it a lot.
The second time I saw it, I went with Derek because he decided he wanted to go. And unlike some Christmas nights that you've experienced with us, where he definitely didn't want to be in the movie theater, like this was his choice. But you know, he has no idea what else is playing or what even the movies are kind of like in general right now. So watching him watch the Batman versus Superman trailer and the X-Men Apocalypse trailer and the Captain America
Civil War.
Blood Feud or whatever, yeah, Civil War. And just after everyone go like horrible, terrible. Are any of these movies in like hit franchises? It's like, yes, they are. Why would anybody want to watch? Oh my God. But that this is just such a after watching 3 minutes apiece of each of those, Star Wars just feels like such fresh air to me, but I'm sure they feel the same to a lot of people, but not to me.
Oh, you think that they feel like fresh air to people? The other ones?
I think for lots of people this one does. I'm sure there are lots of people out there who think who for whom this is all the same ball of wax. Like,
Oh, I see what you're saying.
but I think they worked so hard to find charismatic actors and not get, especially for a movie too that's so has to be so confident of its audience wanting to pore over every single thing in it that it still moves so fast and doesn't bait you with a bunch of minutiae to contemplate. Like, great.
The only thing that didn't really work for me was the First Order.
Yeah.
Like I thought, I mean, I hated every scene with Supreme Leader Snoke, but that's the only part of the movie that I just really was like turned off by.
I've heard that from a couple of people, so why did you feel that way?
The fact that he was a giant was particularly annoying. Like, I couldn't think of anything within the Star Wars universe, even, that would correlate to. It just felt very sort of off canon to me. just because there aren't really, like, giant humanoids that I can think of. And I'm like, is it just like a projection thing, like a Wizard of Oz thing, where he's actually a small person? Like, I don't, I don't know. I was like trying to come up with reasons why this thing would be projected to be this huge giant, you know?
Yeah.
And it really bothered me, also because the character design was ugly, and not in a, like a fun, evil, ugly way. And then anything extended from him, like I love Domhnall Gleeson as an actor, but I thought he was really overplaying it.
Completely.
So that part of the movie, I was like, eh, doing the like cat covering up the poo part. But otherwise, that's my favorite motion to make when I don't like something. Otherwise, I was like all on board with it, and I was thrilled to see everyone again. Like, you know, it's like, you know, people respond to it like it's their childhood, which it is for, you know, a huge
Right.
bulk of the population.
Extra funny when they're cutting in front of actual children in line to have their childhood back, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the I think one of the fun things about franchises in general, which is why I wish more of them would have the lighter spirit that this one does, is there is really something to be said for entertainment for the masses that everybody has like a personal connection to. And because you can't really replicate those personal connections, like
Yeah.
everybody has like little things that are their things, you know,
Right.
that they really obsessed over, you know, like my thing was not Han Solo, like so many people's things, you know.
What was your thing?
I just loved like any scene between Luke and Leia. I was so obsessed with as a kid.
Okay.
Like, you know, them in tandem, you know. And I, you know, I would get really obsessed with very particular like side characters, which I know a lot of people did, but like the movies are so full of like fun little things that everybody has like different touchstones, which I think is really fun about like mass entertainment things, which is why I wish like so many of the big ones wouldn't be so, oh, I'm so serious.
Right. Or even determined to make that every seeming peripheral character or action or spectacle is actually crucial. You know, like there's something fun about side characters that just remain side characters. Or
Yeah.
my obsession was always the seven bounty hunters in Empire Strikes Back and all the weird ass monsters in Jabba's palace. Like those were the
Yes.
creatures I always wanted to play with. I fuck Han. Fuck, I don't care. Like Squid Head.
I
Zuckuss.
was really into Bib Fortuna for
Oh,
some reason.
absolutely.
And I lo yeah, I loved the I forget the name, but like the that weird ass singer and
Yeah, Sice Noodles,
Nice
sure.
Noodles, yes.
Yeah. Here we
And
go.
yeah, so like I think that that's a really fun thing. So when I was watching like the Batman versus Superman trailer, which I think is has to be the worst looking thing ever.
Just
Like
atrocious.
everybody looks constipated. It's just like,
Yep.
oh. Like, is it just going to be like 2.5 hours of people scowling? Like, I
It would
don't.
appear, and I just hate what it looks like they've done with Wonder Woman. Like, I'm happy if I'm wrong, but ew. Let's make her into a brown space whore. Like, let's put her into just brown tatters. And then she can scowl. Like, why does everybody have to scowl?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe like this season I've been into really like happy things, I don't know, which
Yeah.
maybe says more about me than the movies, I don't know. But like even like Carol, for example, which everybody's like, "Oh, it's so sad." And I was like, one of the great joys of Carol to me is how much Rooney Mara smiles in it, which I
Yeah.
don't think I've ever seen from her.
And how funny it frequently is.
Yeah.
To President McKinley.
Yeah, and that whole scene of opening presents and like it, the like the little jokiness between Abby and Carol. But anyway, we can get and talk about Carol too much. So we'll.
Yeah.
But I just mean like I was just shocked at how charming Rooney Mara was while smiling, which all of her big parts are like crying or being angry.
Or just a statue.
Right.
Or trying not to laugh at whatever Catherine Zeta-Jones is doing in Side Effects.
Right. had totally forgotten about that.
I had a
Trust
thing.
you to bring it back to the ill-fated lesbian performances.
Well, I have to credit that I had a conversation with our new, shared best friend Teo Bugby about that, and just watching Rooney Mara connect so fully with this lesbian character, and then think back 2 years to having her watch Catherine Zeta-Jones being, "I'm gonna do it like a lesbian. I'm gonna be real lesbian for you guys," and then comes up with that. "I'm gonna have big chunky glasses like a lesbian, under which I'm a different kind of lesbian." Okay. I'm glad you enjoyed all those movies in the 30s, like the hygiene films specifically.
Oh, Catherine Zeta-Jones. It's been a while.
It's been a while. So, is there anything else to say about Star Wars in particular?
There's got to be something else to say. Oh, I will say, being a tiny bit more critical, I wish I really enjoyed it again. I keep saying that as a disclaimer, but I do wish that the action scenes had been a little more fun in their choreography.
Okay.
Because I think that would have fit completely in with what they were going for.
What do you mean fun in their choreography?
Just more memorable
Uh-huh.
with more like interesting beats. Like I wanted more of like there's that great moment in the lightsaber duel between Finn and Kylo Ren where the hilt part of his lightsaber, which is the new fancy design, which is so fun, burns Finn's shoulder.
Yes.
And that was so like shocking because like of seeing like seven movies of this world and never having any beat like that. And it was scary but also fun in a weird like pop culture way. And I wanted more of the action scenes to have more sort of that like what's gonna happen now? Just because like it's so wants to be such a rousing adventure, and then the choreography, at least to me, felt a little perfunctory in that big action scenes. But whatever. All around, it's quite a success as high wire walks go of trying to please the entire world.
And I do, I mean, Derek's one, he loved it too, and one of his only real misgiving was just how close to the plot and premises of the first one it is. And even when we rewatched the original three beforehand, we were struck by just how much of Jedi is like, let's just have a generator that we have to take down again, like, and it can save us from yet another Death Star. And then this one is, let's take down another shield and save us from another Death Star. So I think I just had so much fun during this that even though I do recognize that, it just didn't weigh me down that much. But and I'm happy right now to think of it as homage, but I would really be excited if the next two, especially the next one, since I trust, as we all do, Rian Johnson more than Colin Trevorrow, if we do something truly different, maybe.
A third time with the Death Star is kind of a shock. And not in the good way. And I do hope that we get more General Leia Organa, can I say? Because I love Carrie Fisher so much, and she had a really small part.
But so moving to watch all of those people.
And I love that they didn't try to pretend that they weren't old. Like,
Exactly.
I know it's part of the, a part of the whole, like, 30 years later or whatever.
Right.
But, so many, especially so many franchise movies never deal with anybody, under 20 and over 40,
Right.
That's this very sort of narrow window of like lives that you can have on screen. So I thought that was a really cool thing about it.
I agree. You guys should all think about seeing it.
I know it's a hard sell.
But if it's playing in a state near you,
If you have to
drive to
drive
that
half an
state.
hour.
That's right.
Do try to see it on a big screen, though.
Oh, for sure. And I think 3D is a real asset to this one.
Oh, I didn't see it in 3D, and I don't plan to.
I've seen it that way both times, and I really enjoyed it.
I'm just not... I can't think of a movie where I really enjoyed the 3D.
Gravity. Oof. Ouch.
I mean, I didn't dislike it in Gravity. I just... Okay. It never adds anything for me.
Okay.
It just, you know... Like, I will always remember leaving Avatar with my friend John, taking off these big, huge glasses we were wearing, and he was like, if only real life were in 3D. And me just laughing so much. It's like, I don't need it from the movies. That's how life looks, you know? And in the movies, it always looks chintzy to me. It always looks like I'm looking into tiny little dioramas instead of the big... I don't know what it is about the flat screen, but to me, that's way more immersive... Mm-hmm. Then this weird, like, I always feel like I'm in a tiny diorama when I'm watching 3D. Which would work, like, I think 3D would probably work for, like, Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah.
But that's probably the only place I would be excited to see 3D.
Magic Mike.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
What else did you see over Christmas?
I think that the ones we've discussed are most of the theatrical catch-up on DVD, so Nasty Baby and Results and Predestination, Welcome to Me.
See, I haven't seen so many of those. Yeah. I did see Nasty Baby.
I really liked that one.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. Like, and I didn't even mind the last act.
Like, I didn't... Of course, it's not as fun to... I mean, the movie's so fun for such a long time, and that's the last act obviously isn't, but I do completely understand that that's what the movie's doing. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a fan. And
I even wanted to see his whole art project.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, the movie is not about art installations, but the main character... played by the director, Sebastian Silva, is an artist, and the title comes from his exhibit that he's working on, where he wants to do adults in sort of pretending to be babies.
And one thing I liked about that was that, well, I was watching it thinking, this doesn't seem that amazing, but okay, I guess the plot requires that I think this is really inspired. And then they're like, this is stupid. So it's... Like, I love it when a movie actually does want you to react to what it's showing you instead of just take as a given what's good or bad or, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I liked that movie a lot.
Yeah, his career is interesting to me.
I know. And there's a way in which the last few, like, The Maid is less like anything else he's done since.
Right.
They all are like each other. And there's a way in which there's a rhythm or a structure that he keeps going back to of... seemingly light, slightly ornery comedy that culminates in catastrophe. Mm-hmm. But I like it every time.
You're like, but I'm for it.
I'm for it, yeah. Maybe the best one that I saw that was a catch-up... Oh, there were two. No, there were three. Okay, but especially there were two. Mississippi Grind, have you seen that?
I haven't, but I have the screener.
So good. And I think you would...
So why did they not support that? It came out on... demand at the same time, like, nobody went and saw it because it was on TV.
Yeah, there was that article that Dave Ehrlich did about A24, I think, explained how this one and Slow West were both... I'll get this wrong and people should just read the article, but that there's part of A24 where the business is actually about things going day and date to on demand.
Okay.
And another part, and it's part of how they finance themselves. And then these other movies that are singled out, usually ahead of time, I think, as bound for theatrical. And then those two have been cases, he spends more time on Slow West, and I might even be conflating them, but of something resonating so much that people ask for more of a theatrical release because the reviews are so good and audiences like them. Mm. But they're sort of slated ahead of time as they really were only supposed to be in theaters for a very short amount of time in a very few places.
Right.
But I loved that. And the actors are all, like, as the kind of ensemble movie that we've talked about a lot, mm-hmm. of everybody in it famous and not famous really feeding the movie, it's amazing. And Ben Mendelsohn's amazing. Ryan Reynolds is really good.
I don't know. That always surprises me.
I know. Yep.
We discussed Christmas. Douglas Sirk. Oh, anyway, I lost it. I had something. Okay. It's not important. Thanks for tuning in.
Fabulous Baker Boys.
Well, that would be a whole podcast in and of itself. We probably should have more podcasts where we just look back at old movies, because those are some of the best nights on Twitter.
I couldn't believe when I just posted one little capsule about Ordinary People. Like, 50 folks just turned up out of the woodwork. Wow, that was cool.
Yeah, I would say my Fabulous Baker Boys didn't have that many people turn out for it, but it just happened to me organically. It was on the television, which has been a very long time since it just popped up on the television.
Plus, I don't want to speak for the masses, but I just defer to you so much on the Fabulous Baker Boys. He doesn't need to hear me say anything about it. He's got this. Like, let's just observe him observing.
Yes. Yeah, I gave up. I was going to sort of live tweet the whole thing, but you know, people weren't really responding. I'm like, I'm going to back down because I get a little crazy about this movie.
Was it that new... Was it a Twilight Time Blu-ray?
No,
that you were watching?
No, it was on television is what I'm saying.
Oh.
And so okay. That's why it was so unexpected. I just, you know, the boyfriend goes, I have a gift for you. And I look over at the TV and it's a cityscape. And I'm like, Fabulous Baker Boys!
That's why I thought he'd actually bought it for you. But
No.
Oh, okay.
And like, I'm like, I don't even know how I knew that. Like...
It was in your genes.
I just screamed it out, and then I thought later, like, how did I know that? It was just a cityscape. Like, literally, there were not even any windows you were seeing actors in. It was just a cityscape. So, anyway, that's funny.
It's like when you realize you're a Cylon. How do I know this? I don't know.
What was the song that triggered them? Was it All Along the Watchtower or something?
I think so, yeah. Yours is making whoopee. my favorite, which is the song about peas.
That Michelle Pfeiffer wrote.
Yes.
It's important to know that.
She, too, could have been an Oscar nominee in an unexpected category.
Maybe she would have won that one.
Maybe she would have won that one.
Anyway, this was fun.
Oh, totally fun.